So let me start over again. Thank you. So it's officially on record. So I will, I'll be talking about generating RVB states. So let me just change the title a little bit. With lots of terms. So I'll try to explain all these terms as we go ahead. So it's, what I'm presenting is a proposal to a proposal for an experiment to generate RVB states in the lab. So I'll explain what RVB states are, and it's through the mechanism of Dickey subgradients. So I'll explain what Dickey subgradients is too. Good. So this is done with. So my name is Ganesh. So Ganesh is actually my first name. So please do call me Ganesh. Ramachandran is my father's name. Turns out. And a master's student in my institute, Mr. Giri, and Professor Bhaskaran, who also from Perimeter, he's coming next month. So those of you who know Professor Bhaskaran might know there's a strong correlation between these two words, Bhaskaran and RVB, so lots of the things he does have both of them together. Good. So this works on the archive, the number is. Good, so let's start in 1954. With R.H. Dickey. So Dickey turns out to be a phenomenal physicist, has made many, many contributions. I didn't know much about him before doing this. He's contributed to the cosmic microwave background, to general relativity, to optics. He's essentially a microwave experimentalist who also contributed to a lot of theory. So he wrote a paper in 1954 called Coherence in spontaneous emission processes, or something of that sort. So we'll start off with his paper. So in his paper, he begins with a thought experiment. So I'll explain his thought experiment now. So the essential ingredient for his thought experiment and for this talk is a two-level system. Okay, so just to explain this, so assume we have some system that has two levels, the ground state and an excited state, and it can emit a photon by jumping from the excited state to the ground state. Or it can absorb a photon and go from the ground state to the excited state. There are many, many physical systems that can realize this, but we will not worry about this so much. We will assume that such a system exists. So in some of the experiments I'll talk about, these are actually superconducting qubits in a microwave cavity. So I'll give some details about that. Right? So suppose I want to write a Hamiltonian for this system. Okay? So I would write a Hamiltonian in this form. I would say B times SZ operator. Some S minus dagger so the A's denote some phonon. So I'll justify this Hamiltonian in some detail a little bit, how you can actually realize this Hamiltonian, but for now just let's go with this. So I'm modeling this two-level atom as a spin half system. Okay, it has an energy splitting B. That I'm representing as B times some spin Z operator. So this gives me some energy splitting between them. Right? And now there is a photon energy. Photons have some energy, so omega times A dagger A. And you can go from the excited state to the ground state, and you can emit a photon or the other way around. That has some coupling constant G. Right? So this is the Dickey Hamiltonian. We'll expand on this in a little bit. Okay. So starting from this, Dickey asks this question. So this is his thought experiment now. Let me push this up. I want that visible. Okay. So the thought experiment was as follows. So please feel free to interrupt me at any time. So Dickey asked the following question. So suppose there is a single atom, a single two-level system in the excited state. I'll now denote them as spins. Up is excited, down is in the ground state. Suppose there is a single two-level atom in the excited state. It will emit a photon, and it will have a characteristic rate of emitting a photon. Right? Now suppose we bring in another spin that's actually in the ground state, close to this spin. I move this physically close to this spin. Right? Now this cannot emit a photon. This is already in the ground state. Now Dickey's question was, if I bring this close to this spin, will this affect the emission of a photon from this excited state? Yeah, that is a simply motivated question. So he was actually thinking of neutrons in a magnetic field. Neutrons are spin half in a magnetic field. They're split. They have two spin states. right? So to understand this, let's modify that Hamiltonian a little bit. Let me write down a Hamiltonian for this now. So I'm going to say B times is a, essentially now there are two spins. There is one and two. Si, z, and then there is Si plus, if we said I have to absorb a photon, Si minus a dagger. Essentially, there's just one spin. This is two copies of that. It's just two spins. Right? So now let's look at this Hamiltonian applying to this system. Right? So let's first think of this Hamiltonian, and let's look at its Hilbert space. So,
So these two spins do not interact.
Yes, that was Dickey's assumption. Okay. Yes, I'll justify that in a little bit. So if I have to describe a state or the Hilbert space corresponding to this Hamiltonian, I have to specify something like this: sigma one, sigma two, and n. So this is the spin of the first atom, spin of the second atom, and the number of photons. So in this language, Dickey's initial state in his thought experiment is up, down, zero. So initially there are zero photons, one in the excited state, one in the ground state. And the question is, how does this emit a photon? Okay. So what he did was this. He looked at the spin state alone. The spin state, which is up, down, you can rewrite it as follows. You can say it's 1 over root 2 times well, I'm just adding and subtracting some terms. Okay. So this is exactly equivalent to this. So the down up part cancels. But written this way, you see that this is actually a singlet. And this is a triplet. So the initial state you're starting with for the spins is an equal linear combination of a singlet and a triplet. Now imagine this Hamiltonian acting on this state. Right? And now you see this is actually S total Z. You have two spins, it's angular momentum addition. This is the total Z operator. Whereas this is the total S plus operator and total S minus operator. Right? So when that acts on the singlet, it'll actually annihilate the singlet. Because the singlet is S is equal to zero, so that will completely annihilate this. So the singlet part is actually an eigenstate of Hamiltonian. But the triplet part is not. When S minus acts on the triplet, it can go to triplet minus one, and it'll emit a photon. Okay. So Dickey argued that this initial state, when you bring in the other atom, now your initial state is actually half a singlet and half a triplet. So with probability half, it'll emit a photon. And probability half, it will not. So he called this, we will call this a dark state and this a bright state. So this can emit and this cannot emit. Okay, let me just take off my sweater. It's getting a little hot. Yes. So Dickey actually showed that, so he calculated the rate of emission from this. So it turns out that this does not emit a photon. This emits a photon, but the rate at which it emits a photon is twice the rate of a single excited state, just a single spin emitting. It's just a Fermi golden rule calculation, a simple calculation. So on average, there is no effect. You bring in the other spin, a photon is emitted at the same rate. But if you do a single one-shot experiment, you'll see that half the time, no photon comes out, and half the time, one photon comes out. Right? So this is the quantum effect of radiation in this case. OK, so now let's build on that. And actually, Dickey did. Dickey extended this to n spins. I move over there. All these boards move. Let me push this up and use this board. Okay. So extension to n spins. So Dickey worked this part out, and you're still in 1954. So Dickey generalized this, and he thought of an n-spin system. Suppose I have n spins, sigma 1, sigma 2, up to sigma n. That's my initial state. And I ask, will a photon be emitted? What's the probability? Right? So he worked this out. It's again, a fairly simple calculation. So you can suppose I write the state of this n-spin system as S total comma m total. This is the usual spin quantum numbers. I can always write a state as a linear combination of these states. This is just angular momentum addition, right? So this is the S quantum number and the spin Z quantum number. So he calculated, suppose you assume this is the initial state with zero photons, and what's the probability for this to emit one photon? So M total has to decrease by one, because there's S minus acting on it, then one photon is emitted. Okay, and he showed that this rate is maximum, so emission rate is maximum for so suppose I want to maximize emission, I have to prepare the state such that S is n by 2 and m is 0. So n by 2 is actually the maximum S you can have. So if you're adding n spin half spins, each of them is a spin half moment. If you add them, the maximum S you can have is n by 2. Okay? So S should be maximum and M should be minimum, at least the absolute value of M should be minimum. And this state has the maximum amplitude, maximum rate of emission. The rate of emission actually scales as N squared. So this was very surprising to Dickey. So suppose I have N different emitters, but spatially well separated, just N independent emitters, each of them emitting at a certain rate. Then the total rate would just be the sum, so it would just scale as N. But here, the emitters are in a coherent quantum state. The rate of emission actually scales as n squared. So this is very surprising that somehow all the spins are emitting together and they manage to get a very high rate out of this. So he called this a super radiant state. Okay, so with S, this state is a super radiant state. That's his definition. Okay. So what we will deal with now is the opposite of this limit. We will consider subradiant states. So in particular, we will consider states such that S total is equal to 0, M total is equal to 0. So we are still considering a state of n spin half spins, but formulated so that S total is 0, M total is 0. Right? Now, if I'm able to create such a state, this state will not emit a photon, because I have S minus, S total minus acting on this, that will simply annihilate the state. So this will be an eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. It will not emit a photon, it will be a long-lived state. So recently there have been lots of proposals to make these states with the motivation of making quantum memories. So if you create the state, it will not emit a photon, it will be long-lasting. It will stay for a long while. But most proposals are for very small systems, two spins or three spins or four spins. So I will present a protocol which can be generalized to n spins, and I will, with some caveats. I will try to explain that. Okay, so with that, let me try to physically motivate this Hamiltonian. The Hamiltonian that we wrote down, actually we never did, sorry. We write it down? Let me just write it down now. Okay, so what I'd written down there was a Hamiltonian for two spins, but really I have n spins here. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to replace 2 with n. Okay, so there's n spins. This is some energy splitting. There's a photon contribution, and then spins can emit or absorb photons. Okay, so this Hamiltonian, let me justify how it can be realized. And this is where cavity QED comes in. Okay, so justification for Dickey Hamiltonian. Or you can say physical realization. Okay, sticky Hamiltonian. So this is actually already experimentally, there are many experiments in this regime. So the first point to note is that there is only one photon mode here. You can imagine if there is an isolated spin in free space, it can emit a photon with any momentum. It can conserve momentum in some way. So there'll be many photon modes, and it's very hard to get coherence. So we want there to be only one photon mode that will interact with the spin. So the way to do it is to introduce a cavity. So let me make a cavity with mirrors on both sides. So electromagnetic radiation is quantized. Okay, so There are many harmonics possible. So, but the electromagnetic radiation is quantized. So there are quantized energy levels for the photon. They can only exist in certain levels. Okay. Now we have a two-level atom that has some energy difference B. This is excited, this is ground state. Now suppose this energy difference closely matches with one of the frequencies, but if it's very different from the other frequencies, then you can imagine that a photon that comes from this transition will always go into this, but not into these, because it doesn't conserve energy. Okay, so we can use the quantization of electromagnetic field in a cavity to just get one photon field. And that's the one photon field that enters here. Okay, so, yes, please.
So this is related to me. This is your James Cummings model and
yes,
with
yes.
Rotating wave approximation.
Yes.
You've not taken into account that there could be different polarizations.
Yes. So you
so
can.
So when you say that one state, you mean really.
Modulo the polarization. That's what I mean. Yes, the polarization is easy to take into account. You just get two photons, but they just act in the same way, so that's fine. So I'm ignoring that for simplicity. If that's good. Okay. So there's one more issue that has to be okay. Two more. One more issue that has to be dealt with is okay. So this is a cavity. Now suppose we place the spins here. These are all spins that spin half states with two-level atoms that we placed in there. And they have some characteristic spacing A. They're placed the distance A apart. Oh, A I've used for something else, so let me call that D. Distance is D. So we should choose that distance as follows. Okay, so that distance should be chosen very carefully in the following way. So it should be much greater than the de Broglie wavelength of each two-level atom, which means the two-level atom wave function should not overlap. If they do not overlap, it's very unlikely that they will interact unless there are long-range interactions present. So this step is to justify ignoring spin-spin interaction. Justifies ignoring terms like S1, S2, alpha, beta. You can imagine a term like that, that might occur in the Hamiltonian, but the spins just talk to each other. Here they don't. They talk to each other through the photon mode. That's the only way they can interact. So this part allows us to justify that. Then this part, distance should be much smaller than the wavelength of this mode. Right? And that's important for a silly reason. So you can imagine that this term that occurs. So suppose this, let me write this separately. So let me just write the first part. Let's just assume there are two spins, right? One and two, and this term occurs in the Hamiltonian. Right? Now suppose the distance between one and two were very large, then this A would actually come with a phase factor, Q dot R1, then here you'd get Q dot R2. And this simply comes from the wave nature of light. It has some phase difference. So I'm ignoring these kind of terms. So you need this spacing to be much smaller than the wavelength. So these phase factors are essentially the same. You can just take them out. Okay, so that's one more assumption. One more step needed to do this. There's also a rotating wave approximation, but let me skip that for simplicity. Okay, so there's one more point that has held back experiments for so long. So we're still in 1954, right? That's still, Dickey's paper is 1954. But his thought experiment, which is apparently very simple, just two spins coming together, it was experimentally realized in 2014. Right? After 1954, it had to wait for so long. And it had to wait for this following reason. So let me put this down. 2014, Mlinek et al. So this is in Nature Communications. This is experimental realization of Dickey's thought experiment. And the reason they had to wait is this. The thought experiment is still just two spins. It's just two spins together, one up, one down. Does it emit a photon or not? The reason they had to wait for so long was to get a lossy cavity limit. So let me just explain that. This is crucial for what I'm going to say later on as well. So in reality, the cavity, the way I've drawn the cavity, there's perfect mirrors everywhere. Light bounces off here, bounces off there, and is quantized. Right? But in reality, these mirrors are chosen to be half silhouette. They're not perfectly opaque. They're somewhat transparent. So you can actually shine in a strong laser. You can use a strong laser to actually pump light into the cavity if you like. And this end is also somewhat transparent. So this end is actually more transparent than that end. So if the light comes out, it'll preferentially come out through this end. Okay? And you can put a detector here. Okay? So you can put a photon detector. So it's much more sophisticated, but that's the cartoon theorist picture. The reason to do this is you have to measure something. So if the spins are inside the cavity and there's a photon inside, how are you going to measure, how are we going to see the system? So the way they measure it is they allow the photon to come out. They create the spins, two spins, up, down, as we discussed in this. Then they let the photon come out and they do a complicated measurement to get the density matrix of the photon that's emitted. And you can actually work it out rather simply from there. So that's what they measure. So I'll come back to that in just a bit. So to do that, the photon should come out very quickly. So suppose the loss at the cavity is very weak. So the probability for the photon to come out is very small. Then the photon would just keep bouncing back inside, and you would have to wait for a very long time, or you may not know if the photon may not even come out. So what they managed to do recently in this 2014 paper and others is this: they reached this limit. This limit can be described as follows: rate of loss from cavity. So I mean photon loss, the rate that the photon comes out is much greater than rate associated with spin photon coupling. So there is some spin photon coupling here, this G, and this G controls how fast the spins react to the photon. So for instance, how fast will the spin emit a photon? But that rate is much smaller than the rate at which the photon comes out of the cavity. So essentially what this means is if the spins emit a photon, that photon instantaneously leaves the cavity. That's the bottom line in this experiment. So you can actually look for the photon outside. If a photon is emitted, you see it right away. Well, right away as in with some time scale that's set by this loss. You know how fast photons will leak from the cavity, and you can actually measure it outside. Okay, all right. So far, so good. Yes, please.
Apologies if this is obvious.
Please do, please.
So you're using the laser light to sight the spins to begin with.
In this experiment, they did not. They made the spins in the up-down state. They can address them individually, so they can create them as a direct product state. Then they let go and observe the photon coming outside.
I'm just getting a bit confused because sure. You know the laser light being a coherent state, so the number of photons is defined.
Right, yes. So if you're pumping in, that's a pump. So those are much more complicated experiments when you do pump in photons, as you point out. Good, okay, so now we have all of this set up. So now I'm going to present this proposal. I do have one blackboard left, which I have to access this way. Or maybe I'll just leave this on. I'll use this one for simplicity. Okay, so now I'm proposing the following proposed protocol in the experiments. So the goal is to isolate a subradiant state. The goal is to create a subradiant state, a state with S total equal to zero. So let me present this protocol. This is how we think the experiment should be done. This is different from how it was done here. Okay, step one, initialize spins. So I'll assume now there are n spins, not just two spins. This experiment was done only for two spins. I'll assume there are n spins. Initialize spins in the direct product state. So if we had two spins, for instance, we could just make them one up, one down. There is technology available to do this now. You can address each spin, force it to be up. Another spin, you force it to be down. If you have n spins, you can. We'll consider some examples later on. What can be done? So next step, you initialize the spins inside the cavity. You let it go. Observe if a photon is emitted. If a photon is emitted, so you have to put a photon detector outside the cavity on that side. If a photon is emitted, you discard the current run. You go back to step one. Okay. If a photon is observed, discard run. Go back to one. If no photon is seen, for sufficiently long, or sufficiently, I will put in quotes, long, conclude that a subradiant state has been achieved. That So what I'm really measuring here is a measurement protocol. So the analogy for this is the Stern-Gerlach experiment. You take a single spin, you can make it in a linear combination of up and down. Now if you measure SZ, you will get either up or down. You will not get anything in between. It's the, so you'll collapse the wave function onto up or down, right? So similarly, what we are measuring here is the number of photons emitted. Okay, perform a measurement for the number of photons emitted. That will collapse the wave function onto many different states. Okay. Especially if the number of photons emitted is zero, it'll collapse it onto a subradiant state. So let me explain that.
And what are you going through? You're discarding the whole state?
Yes, you just start over again. Start over again, yes. There could be something interesting to be done with this too, but let's focus on this. So essentially what I'm saying is, let's take this example. Suppose I had only up or down.
Before you go on, what do you mean by sufficiently long?
Yes, so the sufficiently long is determined by this. So there is a characteristic rate for the photon to leave the cavity. That's well known. So you can just remove the spins.
So it's
three
to go the cavity.
Yes, it's a characteristic of the cavity. So you have to wait for three times this characteristic time scale or something like that, certain number of this. Okay, so just to illustrate this, suppose we take this initial state, as in Dickey's thought experiment. As we discussed, this is actually a combination, linear combination of a singlet and a triplet. This will emit zero photons, this will emit one photon. You initialize the spin in this state, this is a direct product state. Observe if a photon is emitted. If it is in this state, it will emit zero photons. So n photon, zero. If it were this state, n photon will be one. And that photon will come out, and you will see this. And if you see a photon, you immediately know this is, it's become the triplet state. It's no longer this state. The wave function is collapsed onto the triplet. Right? And after emission, it actually becomes triplet minus one. Right? But if no photon is emitted, you have collapsed it onto a singlet state. So this is the crux of the proposal. Okay. So this experiment has not been done before, at least not in this way. There might be some issues, but we think this is a promising thing to do. So now let me give you two examples. This is just for two spins. I'm going to talk about n spins now. And let me give you two examples. You have a choice of the initial direct product state. And by choosing the direct product state cleverly, you can generate very, very beautiful quantum states. Okay, so let me give you two examples. Two cases. So essentially, I'm going to say there are two states. two cases. Both cases give you RVB states. The RVB states are of different kind. One is a simple RVB, one is a more complicated RVB. Okay, so the first case. Let me take n spins. Chalk. So initial state. So I've just written it this way for convenience. So there are n spins in total. One spin is in the excited state. N minus one spins in the ground state. Okay. Suppose I can, this is my initial state. I'm initially going to fix one in the excited state. Everything else I'm going to fix in the ground state. And then I will let it go. And I will measure the photons that are being emitted. Is this clear? Okay. Please, do ask me if not. Okay. So this is n spins. Please remember it's n spins. So let's look at this spin. Let's try to write this in terms of the SM, in the SM basis, the angular momentum basis. Right? So let's look at M total for this. So just there. So again, we are adding N spin half momenta, N spin half moments. M total is just this, minus N by 2 plus 1. Okay. So imagine all spins were down, then M would be minus N by 2. Each is minus half, N of them, so it's minus N over 2. But now one of them has been flipped, so you get a plus one. Okay? This is all. Okay. So now what can S total be? So just to remind you, we're adding n spin half moments. So in general, when you add n spin halves, S total can take values 0, 1, 2, n by 2 minus 1, n by 2. These are the only values it can take, just from properties of angular momentum addition. You add n spin halves, I'm assuming n is even, okay? You get 0 all the way to n by 2. Right? You can convince yourself this is true. So these are all the possible values of S total, but we already know M total. M total is minus n by 2 plus 1. Right? But we know that M total, the maximum value is, it can only go from minus S to S. It already has a certain value, so it cannot be 0, for instance. You cannot get 0 minus n by 2. If S is 0, M has to be 0. Right. If S is 1, M has to be minus 1, 0, 1. But this is very large, minus n by 2 plus 1. So actually, the only two allowed values are these two. S can only be n by 2 or n by 2 minus 1. There are no other possibility. Okay, with me so far? Good. Now, okay, let me keep this here. Let me use this bot. All right, so now I can write my initial state, which is up, down, 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 down. I can write it as some alpha times S total is n by 2, M total is minus n by 2 plus 1, plus beta times S total is n by 2 minus 1, m total minus n by 2 plus 1. So I can find alpha and beta such that this is true. Okay. So it has to be in these two cases. But once again, we can notice that there's a very nice pattern here. So here you see, this is s is n by 2 minus 1, and m is the negative of that. So m is the lowest possible value you can have. M cannot be lower than this. So this state cannot emit a photon. If you take this state and you act S total minus on this, because M is already in the lowest possible value, M is minus S. So it cannot go further, it'll annihilate this state. This state will give you zero. So this state is actually a dark state. It cannot emit a photon. Okay? This state can emit a photon. Emits one photon. So this is a bright state, and that's a dark state. Okay. So in fact, just to clarify things a little bit here, so we are adding n spin half moments, and we're writing it in terms of S and M. So for instance, if I just specify S and M, it may not be a unique state. There may be multiple states with the same S and M values when you're adding n spin half moments. But however, if you look at the initial state, there'll only be one component. That's an issue. Good. So let me try to explain this a little further now. So this state actually has S is n by 2. It's the maximum possible S. This state is unique. This state is actually very well known. We can write down this state. So let me write that down. N by 2, m total is n by 2 minus 1. So m total, so this state actually can be written like this. S total minus operator acting on, minus n by 2 plus 1. Suppose I take all spins down. That actually corresponds to S is n by 2, m is minus n by 2. Right? That's trivially true. Now, the m quantum number is just one higher. So I just need to add S plus on this to get this state. So this state, actually, it's very easy to find this state. This state is a W state. It's called W state in quantum information. So this state, this one, is actually some 1 over root n times up, down, 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 plus down, up, plus so essentially in this state one spin has to be up, everything has to be down, and there are n choices for that. It's an equal linear combination of all of those. That's this state. It can be easily shown. So from this you can actually find alpha. So now we know the state. We know the form of the state. We know the state. By just taking the overlap, we know alpha. Okay. Alpha turns out to be 1 over root n. So this is already something dramatic. It's dramatic. So I've told you that this is the initial state. It can emit either one photon or zero photons. The probability for it to emit one photon is mod alpha squared. And actually, that's 1 over n. Okay. So the larger n is, the less likely that a photon will be emitted. It's more likely that it will be dark. So it will be very easy to generate that state with this protocol. Okay? So this was actually noticed. The fact that alpha, the probability for emission goes as 1 over n, is well known from a long time ago. This was actually Tavis Cummings pointed this out. It's also called the Tavis Cummings model sometimes. But this, 1966, something like that. Okay. So this, and they call this a radiation trapping, this phenomenon. This is a nice idea. Let me just explain this. So you see that there's actually one excitation. In this, suppose you were in this state. No, suppose you're in this state. Okay. One spin is in the excited state, so it has some extra energy. And it wants to emit that as a photon. Okay. But it's very unlikely that a photon is emitted. So the way you can interpret this is this spin emits a photon, but that photon is reabsorbed by one of these spins. That becomes up, then that emits again. That is reabsorbed. So the photon keeps continually being absorbed and re-emitted, but never comes out of the cavity. This is called radiation trapping. This was known for a long time. Okay. But this is not our. This is not what we are interested in. What we are interested in is something a bit more condensed matter-ish. Which is, let me get rid of this. Sorry, where is the?
It's on the edge, on the upper level.
Okay, all right. Yes. Something. Just do this here. So suppose you take this as your initial state and you observe if a photon is emitted. If a photon is emitted, you discard the run, you start over again until you're sure that you've collapsed the wave function onto this state. Okay. This state is actually a very, very interesting state, and it's actually an RVD state. That the dark state, which is S total n by 2 minus 1, m total minus n by 2 plus 1, this state I can write as follows. It's actually, you can easily check. In 10 minutes, you can check that this is true. Okay. So for reference, let me write the initial state. The initial state was one spin up, n minus one spins down. Right. So it's as if this spin that's initially up wants to form a singlet. It can form a singlet with this, with this, with this, or with that. So there are n minus one choices. Okay. And it's just a linear combination of all of those. there is some normalization. Let me not write it down. Okay. So what this means is this is a singlet wave function between these two spins. So initially, there's one spin that is up that has formed a singlet with this, with this, with this, or with that. And it's actually an equal linear superposition of all of those states. Okay. So this is the nature of the state. Is this OK? So usually, there is a when you write a singlet like this as a bond, there is a nuance that you have to be careful about. It's the sign. So let me call this 1, 2. So if I write a singlet wave function, say 1, 2, this is really up, down, minus down, up, or root 2. But I have to specify which one is 1, which one is 2. If I write it the opposite way, then I'll pick up a minus sign. Here, always the spin that was initially up is always the first one, because there's no ambiguity inside. Okay? Just to clarify for those doing valence bond bases. Right, so this is an RVB state, and it's an RVB state for the following reason. So let's have a small digression about RVB states. So RVB states were first proposed. Get rid of that. That part is maybe even that is even better. I realize you have to have a. You have to be tall enough to give a seminar at Perimeter Institute.
There's a little ropes on the right hand side.
Oh, now you tell me. Thanks. Okay, good.
It's too entertaining to
tell you. What? Okay, let's see. So RVB stands for resonating valence bond. This was first proposed by Pauling for benzene. Linus Pauling for benzene. This is the concept of resonating valence bond. So we've all seen this perhaps in chemistry. But just in a nutshell, benzene has 6 carbon atoms. Sigma bonds are already formed. So there are 6 pi electrons. And they want to form pi bonds. There are 2 ways they can do that. They can do that. Or they can do this. So Pauling proposed that, and this is a big debate in chemistry for a long time, bond lengths are actually equal when you measure them. Pauling proposed that the benzene is actually a quantum superposition of these two states. So a little misleading, what I'm drawing here are actually chemical valence bonds. Right? So what I've drawn here is a bond is actually just a singlet wave function. For the most part, they can be thought of as the same. Except here, the electrons are actually more likely to be, there's also some spatial component. The electrons like to be closer to each other on this bond. Here, electrons are fixed. There's a spin there, together they form a singlet. That's the, but nevertheless, here also they form a singlet. The spin wave function is a singlet. Okay, so it was first proposed for benzene, and then it came back to life in the 1980s for the high TC cuprates, where the proposal was that. So let's see. So there's Anderson in 1973. Maybe it's a better paper still. This Bhaskaran, Zhu, Anderson. So there are many, many references. I'm just putting one of them. This is 1987. So they proposed that the underlying state in the high TC superconductors, in the cuprates, is actually an RVB state. So the cuprate superconductors can be thought of as a square lattice. They're actually planar systems. Okay. And on every site, you have a spin. You have one electron. It's a Mott insulator. And they can form singlets. So you can imagine that you get some combination like this. I'm just drawing a cartoon. It can be more complicated. But suppose the spins pair up to form these singlets. But there are actually many ways to do this, right? You can imagine that, for instance, these two, I could have drawn them instead this way. Right? Instead of vertical, I could have drawn them as horizontal bonds. So there are many, many possible valence bond configurations. So the proposal was that in the cuprates, the ground state is a linear combination of all of these. And it's a coherent linear combination. It's not a mixed state. It's really a coherent linear combination. Right? And then the proposal was when the cuprates are doped, you dope this Mott insulator. Essentially, what you do is you remove an electron, say, from this site. There's no electron on that. You've removed one electron. Suppose that vacancy resides on this side. Now, you cannot form a dimer on that side because there's no electron there to form a singlet. But this hole can actually move around. Right? So this is a doped Mott insulator, a doped RGB state. So when I try to end, I will try, when I end eventually, okay, I'll present and I'll show that this method can also create doped RGB states, what we propose now. Good. So back to cavity QED. So this, you can see, is a simple form of an RGB state. It has a singlet. That singlet resonates the many possible configurations for the singlet, and the state is a linear combination of all of these states. Okay. So this is, in fact, this is like a weak RGB state because there are n spins and only one dimer. Right? So this is a very weak state. Okay. So I'll propose and I'll discuss a second case now. This was case A. The second case, we'll get a strong RGB. So let me discuss.
It's still a dark also.
Sorry?
Is a strong RGB a dark state?
Yes. Yes. And it's actually more dark than this. And I'll explain why it's more dark.
I think you said Goldilocks is 1 over n.
Sorry?
You have this 1 over n.
Yes?
Does that make it weak? Not the fact that you
have. Actually, this n is not, this is just some normalization. It's some complicated function of n. I've not written it down. There is an explicit form.
It's really that you have 1 over n.
Yes, that's why I'm calling it a weak state. So the next state that I'll write down will have n spins and n by 2 dimers, the maximum number of dimers it can have. So that. Okay, so case B with the same protocol. But now it's a different initial state. So the initial state has so I have n spins, n by 2 spins are in the excited state, n by 2 spins are in the ground state. It's an equal number of up and down. Here you see we had just one excited, everything else in the ground state. Here we have an equal number. So suppose we start from this state, we make this as a direct product state, put it inside the cavity, let go, and see if a photon is emitted or not. Okay. So you can see very quickly that this has m total 0, equal number of up and down spins. So this state, because it has m total equal to 0, S total can actually take any value. It can be 0, 1, up to n by 2. All of them are possible. So I can really write this as something like this. I can call this, running out of letters, let me call it capital A for amplitude. A 0, S equal to 0, m equal to 0, plus A 1, S equal to 1, m is equal to 1, m is equal to 0, plus A n by 2. S is equal to n by 2, m equal to 0. So the same, this initial state, I can rewrite in this form in the SM basis. So this is just resolving. These are the sort of generalized Clebsch-Gordan coefficients. I'm just writing it in the SM basis. Okay. Now you can see that this state will emit 0 photons. So S is 0, m is 0. If you act S minus on this, it'll just annihilate this. M cannot be lowered further. It'll emit 0 photons. This state will emit 1 photon, and so on. And this state will emit n by 2 photons. So they're all possible. So if you do this experiment now, you have n by 2 possibilities for the number of photons that you see. Okay? But once again, let's focus on the case that, suppose we keep observing. If a photon is observed, then you discard the run, you start over again. Let's keep using that protocol. Then you'll collapse the wave function onto this. S is equal to 0, m is equal to 0. This is a strong RGB state. So let me first write this state. Then if there's time or there's interest, I can actually prove that this is an RGB state. Or I can just tell you how the proof works. OK, let me keep this on. Let me take this out. Okay. So this state, which is the, let me call it the dark state that you get from this. So you've observed it, no photon has come out, so it emits zero photons. So you collapse the wave function. That corresponding state is actually this. The proof is complicated, but let me write down the state first. You can, let me call this some, there's some normalization constant. Let me call this some alpha n. Okay, so there are, just the initial state is this, right, for reference. Now you see there's an upspin here. This wants to form a singlet. It has so many choices. It can form a singlet with this, and so on, right? And so suppose it forms a singlet with this. Now the next spin can have so many choices, but again, it can pick one of them. Here you can get, another choice. Or you can get something like this, okay? So there are many, many states, and it's an equal linear superposition of all of them. That's this state. Okay? So just to, this is a strong RVB state. This is again an RVB state because it has dimers, and it's a linear combination of states with dimers. Okay? And the number of dimers here is n by 2. You have n spins, you have n by 2 singlets. And you have every possible way in which the singlets can be formed. Except they should always be formed from, they should connect rows. So a spin that is initially up forms a singlet with a spin that's initially down. You cannot form a singlet this way. Two spins that were initially up cannot form a singlet. So that's the condition, okay? So let's just look at this state for a bit. This state actually has a very nice mathematical structure, and that's key for the proof. The mathematical structure is as follows. For instance, how many such states are there? Right? So I've told you the rules. The way to write the state is I have to form n by 2 dimers. I start from the top row, I go to the bottom row. How many ways can I do that? N by 2 factorial, yes. So there are n by 2 factorial terms. Okay. The way to see that is, let's just imagine this state is some trivial state. They just form dimers vertically. Okay. Now, if I just interchange these two states, these two spins in the bottom row, then I'll get this. But I can do any permutation in the bottom row. I can flip any two spins, any number of spins, and that has to occur somewhere here. Okay. So this is just the number of permutations of n by 2 objects. Yeah. And that's why you have n by 2 factorial terms. And because of this, this has very nice group theoretic properties that actually allow for, that allow for further progress. That we can actually prove this using this. But before that, let me also make some more remarks about this. Okay. So you can look at this state, the way I've written it. I hope this is clear, right? The way I've written down the state. Right? So suppose I had only 4 spins. Suppose I had just initial state was that. And then I collapse it to a dark state. Then there are only 2 possibilities. I have some alpha 4. Then I have it's this plus this. Okay. Again, the singlet sign convention is the one in the top comes first. The one that is initially up comes first. Yeah. So there is a well-defined singlet convention. So for 4 spins, this is very simple. For more complicated spins, for larger n, you get a much more complicated structure. Okay. So one property of this state is it's highly symmetric. It's symmetric under any permutation of spins within a row. Right? So in the bottom row, if I do any permutation of the spins, this state is symmetric. Because you have all the permutations present, you just rearrange the spins, you get back the same state. Similarly, I can rearrange the spins in the top row in any way. Like any permutation of the top row spins is also symmetry of the state. Right? And you can see it from this. So really, this state that we've written down, you can think of as this. Psi dark is so there's not an equal to this. There's a normalization factor. So it's the projector onto spin 0, the projection operator, acting on the initial state. Okay? And now you can easily argue that the projection operator is symmetric under any permutation of spins. And that comes from, because you can write the projection operator explicitly in terms of spin total operators. But you can take my word for it. I can show it to you in 2 minutes. It's not too complicated. But this has, the initial state is symmetric under interchange of any spins within a row. I interchange any of these spins, or within this row I interchange any of these spins. That's also, that's a symmetry of the initial state. Therefore, the resulting state has this symmetry. Also symmetric under any interchange within the top row and the bottom row. Okay. Good. Okay, so there is a proof, so I can tell you if you're interested later. Or I can just tell you very quickly what the proof involves. So the way to prove that this is the dark state, at least the proof that we could come up with is as follows. The crucial part is to determine the normalization of the state. So there is some normalization factor that we don't know. And for general n, this is a very hard quantity to calculate. But we can calculate it using the properties of the permutation group. There is a result in combinatorics called Burnside's lemma, which can be used to calculate the normalization of the state. Once we know the normalization of the state, then we can actually evaluate, I can actually try to evaluate this. I can just take that dark state, take the overlap of the initial state, and then know what the overlap amplitude is, right? So that is one step. The next step is to note that this initial state is really, let me just write the wave function for the top row. That's S total is equal to n by 4, m total equal to n by 4. So there are n by 2 spins all up. The wave function is then that. The bottom row is n by 2 spins all down. So I get this m total is minus n by 4. So this initial state is actually an angular momentum sum of these two states. So we actually know these coefficients. These are Clebsch-Gordan coefficients. I'm adding two spins, and the total spin has all these possibilities. So we know this Clebsch-Gordan coefficient. So we can actually calculate this from just properties of Clebsch-Gordan coefficients. And that is equal to the overlap we get from the RBB state. So the RBB state has to be the state. No other state can be this. Up to a phase factor, this has to be the state. So that's the crux of the proof. Let me just make one more comment. Two more comments. Okay, first comment is, so I wrote down an RBB state earlier, which was a simpler RBB. I said this is weak RBB. It has just one dimer. Okay. So this is more dark than this for the following reason. Okay. If you look at this state, this has lowest possible m. It cannot emit because m cannot fall further. But this state can actually absorb light. M can increase. Suppose I pump in photons from outside. This m can increase. It'll link. So if I act S total plus acting on this state, the state will change. Right? But this state really corresponds to, this is really S is 0, m is 0. You try to act S plus on this, that will also annihilate this. So this can neither absorb light nor emit light. So once you create the state, this is completely decoupled from the photons. Right? And this is actually a check. So suppose you think you have collapsed the wave function, because you've not observed a photon, but maybe your photon detector is not very good. Maybe a photon came out, you just didn't see it. Right? Then there's a way to check. Now you pump in a photon from outside. If that photon doesn't interact with the spins, so if the cavity characteristics look the same, then you know you have this state. There's a way to check the state occurs. So that's the first comment. Just one more comment, and then I'll stop. So the nice thing about doing it this way, nice thing about this proposal is it allows for doped Mott insulators in the following sense. Let me just quickly write the answer and stop. So suppose I take an imbalanced initial state, 2 up, 3 down, and then I project it down to a dark state, so no photon is emitted. You still get a wave function, which is also RVB, but it's a special RVB. Let me write down that wave function. So some normalization factor, chi, and I get this. So this one form the singlet. Sorry, these two form singlet. No, sorry, I. Yeah, correct. These two form singlets. This remains this way. I think that's then two more. Okay, that's not so important, but still. Am I writing the same state again?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, let me just. So essentially, there are two upspins and three downspins. Upspins want to form singlets with the downspins. This spin has three choices. Once you make that choice, this spin has two choices. So there are six possibilities, right? So let me just save myself embarrassment and say there are six choices, right? And that's actually the RVD state that you get out of this. Right? So if you project this to the dark state, you actually get this. This also we managed to prove that you get this state. Okay? Just to compare this, so please, you can imagine, you can generalize this to n spins, and this is true. This is just an imbalanced number, right? So just compare this to this. Here you have every spin is part of a diamond. There's nothing is left. Right? All spins are taken up. Right? Here you have these down spins that are left. This is the extra down spin that is present is just hanging around. And that's loose. You can imagine that that's actually moving around. It can be here, it can be there. This is precisely an analog of doping in the cuprates. Right? This is as if you created a vacancy and you cannot form a singlet there. And the singlets go around it, but that vacancy can move. Right? So this is an analog of a doped RVD state. Right? And hopefully with this protocol, this can be created in the lab. Right? So far, we don't have any clean, okay, I should also note that the RVD state has been known for a long time. It's known in chemistry. But in physics experiments, there's only one experiment that is made in clean RVD state. So in the cuprates, it's still a proposal. Right? We don't know if it's actually an RVD. It's very hard to measure. But there's one experiment with cold atoms, the Emmanuel Bloch's group, but that's only four spins to make an RVB. And then there's another proposal by Simon Trebs. Again, there's only four spins to make an RVB. This proposal works for more larger spins. You can make N spins. You can also make doped RVB, which you cannot do in that case. Okay, with that, I'll stop. Thanks. I'll be happy to take questions, answer more things.
There's no locality in your RVB. This is essentially a long range.
Right.
So is there a way? I mean, in a kinetic matter system, you generally expect like a short range RVB
to be specific.
So the physics here may be very different.
Right. So here it's as if it's just two points. It's not a lattice. You can think of all the up spins as being located in one point, all of this being located in one point. And so that's why it's a much simpler RVB. But because it's simple, it allows us to analytically calculate lots of things, which we cannot do with more complicated cases.
But is it conceivable that you could use a similar approach to generate, say, short-range RVB?
We've thought of this, but we're not sure yet. So one way to do that perhaps might be to take advantage of spin-spin interactions. So after all, spins may interact with each other, even if weakly. Maybe that'll induce a preference for RVBs that are short-range rather than long-range, but we don't know yet. We'd like to look into that. So short-range RVB states are also known to have topological order. So then it's much more exciting, but we don't have a way to make that yet.
Could you perhaps go to lattices with more points by going to higher spins?
I don't know. I suspect not,
yeah.
But we really have to induce some, the spins have to know relative positions. In this Dickey Hamiltonian, there is no information about relative positions. So higher spins alone, I don't think will do it.
Okay.
Right? But might be a nice way to do it. Yes. Yes.
So you actually prepare these original states. So you would say that you can prepare the state.
Right.
I mean, in total experiment, I understand, but like experimentally, that some spins are really up, some spins are really down.
Right. Yes.
How you would actually do this?
Right. So in this experiment that was done in 2014, where they reproduced Dickey's experiment, what they have is a microwave cavity, and they have these superconducting islands, superconducting qubits present inside. So they have these separate, so they can apply a field pulse to each superconducting qubit separately. So they can apply a pi pulse to only one qubit at a time. They have these dedicated lines. So apparently that's possible. But
so these are really not true spins, but it's kind of effective description of something.
Precisely, yes. So it's a superconducting qubit that can either have an exciton or not. So that's the two-level atom, right? Yes. The two-level spin. So you can actually...
But then when you talk about the interaction, it's actually important what you mean by this. Speed.
Precisely, yes, it's yes. So it can be dipolar or Coulomb or something like that. So that can be very important, yes. But for theorists, I think this is okay.
Sure.
There's somebody else's problem. They'll worry about that. Yes, yes.
No, since you have a problem for experimentalists.
Right, yes, yes. They should do some work too, yes.
There are no further questions. Thank you, Ganesh, again.
Thank you.